You know, I am privy to an enormous amount of suffering, and it's the number one reason that people contact me to begin with. Because suffering is really the great stimulus, is it not? I mean, it's the thing that makes us willing to change. It can even make us anxious to change. Of course, it can also make us anxious for everything else to change, but we may begin to notice that that doesn't work. That if I want something to change, I better change me, because I'm incapable of changing the world. But the good news is that when I change where I see the world from, my world will change. And this is one of the strange, I don't know, paradoxes of non-dual spirituality, which is that as dependent upon where I take my stand, if I take my stand as awakeness itself, then I see the world in a specific way. If I take my stand as Fred, as the little man, then I will see the world in a completely different way. And that way we'll have some nice ups and downs to it, but it will have some horrendous downs. Suffering is the essential human condition. Buddha saw this 2,600 years ago. We want more of what we like and less of what we don't like. More of what makes us feel good and less of what makes us feel bad or feel threatened or feel pain. I mean, we're constantly caught in that tug of war between attraction and aversion. And so when we can't, so the real movement, the fundamental movement here is to begin to take our stand as awakeness itself and not as the tool that awakeness is using right now to talk to you, for instance. Which is, of course, really talking to itself. Awakeness is talking to itself. It always is. It's nothing else for it to ever talk to. There's nothing else for it to ever talk about except for itself. And we find ourselves, even though we know that there's just one thing going on, we know that we are it, we nonetheless find ourselves with these relative units that we experience until we don't. And when these units suffer, then we go out and we look for a remedy. And people think, mistakenly, that my job is typically to eliminate suffering. And that's not my job at all, actually. I mean, it can be a side effect of my job. I don't want to say that someone's going to come to the elimination of suffering through me, but that'll probably happen somewhere down the road, if you're lucky. But certainly the reduction, reduction of suffering by a very high magnitude can occur here. But that's not my job. My job is not to relieve your suffering, because number one, I don't know how much suffering you need to endure. I don't know how much suffering I need to endure in order to be willing to live awake. Because that's the real key here, is that so long as we think we're this body, we're going to suffer. I mean, it's just that to the degree that I do not believe that I am this body is that will be the degree of my freedom. So if I'm seeing clearly that I am awakeness itself part of the time, then I am going to experience peace and freedom part of the time. As I increase that, then as I increase my ability to get my identification squared away, then my freedom and peace will expand. And vice versa. If I get confused again, then my suffering will go back up. That's when people get back on the phone with me. It's just a pity of it. But really, my job is never to eliminate your suffering, because your suffering can be your friend. It can be your very best friend. It's been my very best friend. I don't always like my best friend, because my best friend gives me what I need and not necessarily what I want. False friends always will give me what I want, but they will not give me what I need. And so I never grow up and never mature. But my best friend will always give me what I need. And suffering has really been my best friend. If you look at my life as just an example that I'm familiar with, I was a practicing drunk for 25 years. There's a lot of pain in that. I'm not saying I never had any good times drinking. I did, but they were usually pretty early on and very much confined to small scenes that were just, you know, pleasure stolen amid a pool of suffering. But I needed to do that. How do I know? Because I did do that. I had to do that in order to get here in front of this camera talking to you at this moment. Everything that's ever happened had to have happened exactly as it happened. There's no either or, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. There's only this. It's just this. And there's no alternative to this. So but being a drunk for 25 years, you know, a lot of people can wake up and everything's, you know, their life is still fairly together, and they recognize, you know, I have a drinking problem, whatever, and they go out and they get squared away. But I had a problem before I had a drinking problem, because I had a Fred problem. You know, I had an addiction to separation. I was going to do things my way. I wasn't like you. You weren't like me. I wanted to be like you, but I couldn't. And once I found out I couldn't be like you, then I'm going to be the renegade, right? Because that's going to be my story. I'm Fred the renegade. I'm Fred the rebel. I'm Fred the crazy man. And eventually that crazy man status went into, you know, the chasing the mystic for the same sort of reasons. You know, I didn't start out with this thing with the best of motivations. I don't see that until you wake up, I don't think your motivation is particularly critical. Once you wake up, then your motivation becomes important as to why you're in this and what you're doing with this, but not till then. So if you are like so many of us and you're trying to wake up for selfish motives, don't worry about that. It's okay. It's not about you anyway. So actually, you know, I had to go down further. I had to go and I had to live in a park. And I will tell you that when I was living in the park, as I ran out of booze, well, as long as I had booze, the park wasn't that bad in my mind. I was dying, but I wasn't telling myself that story. So that wasn't my experience. It was the body's experience, but the mind's experience was in La La Land. And it was a Zen master in the park in this great no rent. Oh, thrills to me. So I had to go that far down in order for suffering to really get my attention. Do you follow this? Suffering got my attention at that point, and it got my attention very strongly to where I could recognize I'm not doing something right. I'm doing something way wrong because I don't even have a roof. You know, I don't have a clean shirt. I don't, you know, my feet are bleeding. What is all of this? But you would think that that would be enough. It was enough to begin to get me sober, but it wasn't enough to make me stop drinking right that moment. And it was not enough to get me, it was not enough to have me surrender to everything. It just had me, but it was enough to begin the surrender to drinking. I had to suffer much more. I had to, as is now well known, you know, I had to, as I was doing the steps, I had went back and I made amends for a lot of things, and I had to suffer for that. I was willing to do it because I wanted to live free, and I genuinely felt bad about things that had happened in my past, and so I went and I made the best amends that I could make, and I'm still making those amends. And I won't say that I'm suffering right now from that, but I am certainly still experiencing the ramifications of all of that. They still are taking place. They're in this unit's life. They're in Betsy's life. We're still very much affected by things that happened 50 years ago, 45 years ago, whatever. So I had to have yet more suffering. So my job, but look at where I am now, and I'm not trying to, oh, look at Freddy's at the top of the mountain. I don't mean that. I just mean just notice that I'm not in the park. Notice that I'm not suffering. I get mail every day from people who are interested in what I'm seeing and thinking and doing and that just wasn't happening in the park or before the park. I didn't have anything anybody wanted. So why would anybody contact me? So there's obviously been a tremendous sea change. That's what I'm really trying to point to, is the fact there's been a tremendous sea change here. And this sea change would not have happened had I not undergone a tremendous amount of suffering. So my job is to help you tell yourself the truth about your own suffering. That's really my job. What an awakening session is, as I like to tell people, is that it's a situation where we provide the structure, the encouragement, and the guidance to help people tell themselves the truth. It's just that simple. Because we're not mystically separated from God or our true nature or anything else. We can't be. You know, people say, I can't see my true nature. You can't see anything else. You don't know what you're seeing when you see it, but I promise you, you cannot see anything other than your true nature. If you want to see your true nature, look around the room that you're in. There's your true nature right there. We don't know how to see it because it's just too simple and obvious and all that. And when I don't see it from the standpoint of the eyes of truth, when I don't see it from the stand of awakeness, where I'm standing as awakeness, if I'm not seeing it from there, then I'm seeing it from the individual's standpoint. And this individual is this Fredness here, or the thought character Fred, which is what it really is, just a thought character. There's no Fred anywhere. It doesn't exist. Nonetheless, I noticed that one who does not exist has given me hell for about 62 years so far. And he's given me a little less now, but he can still be a boisterous lad. So, if you want to relieve your suffering, that's what I can help you do, is relieve your own suffering. Nobody can take your suffering away from you, and nobody should. I have the ability to help you. And I say I have this ability as if it's magical and I have it myself. I don't mean it that way. Lots of teachers have the ability to help us with our suffering. Lots of good people who are not awake can help us with the physical pain and physical suffering that we might go through, but it's that psychological suffering that really hounds us. Because the body actually requires, the biology here requires very little to be just happy as a clam. You know, look at this, I've got clothes on and I'm fed and I'm warm and I'm dry and it's cold out there and it doesn't get any better than this for a body. But it certainly can get better than this for psychology, which is that I should have tons of money and hot and cold running girlfriends and, you know, whatever it is that, you know, Rolls Royce and a mansion. I mean, you know, just whatever it is, the thing that is or should have all the respect as the big spiritual teacher, if you want to go in that direction, we can pervert that too. You know, we can pervert anything. There are all these available stories that we can tell ourselves to help ourselves suffer. But when we get tired of suffering, we have to become willing to tell ourselves the truth. One way to see this, to begin to understand this on an intellectual level, and we play down the seeing things on an intellectual level. I mean, people play that down all day. Well, I understand it intellectually. If you understand it intellectually, then this thing is actually available to you. You're just pushing it away. You're in denial, just like I was when I was a drunk. I was in denial. I was in denial about awakeness too. And everybody that I know that is not awake is currently in denial about awakeness. That's all it is. It's just pure denial. I think one of the reasons that I tend to be pretty effective as a teacher is the fact that I was a sponsor in recovery for a long, long time, and I helped pull people out of denial. It was the perfect training for what I do here. Because that's what I do, is I help pull people out of denial. I was pretty good at it in recovery. I spoke in recovery centers all the time and everything, and you could just see it. We could watch the lights come on. And the same thing happens here because it's the same thing. We're just like when I was in the park, With booze, I was a Zen master. Without booze, I was a drunk dying in the bushes. So I didn't want, there was no change in the physical aspect of things. But when I became willing to tell myself the truth, I had a shot. I had a shot at getting out of the park. See, the first thing I got to understand, if I'm living in the park, is that I am in the park. And this is not a good thing. And once I recognize that, then possibly I can begin to come up with a plan or get maybe just get lucky to where I get out of there. And that's what happened. But I had to recognize where I was first. So this willingness to tell ourselves the truth is very often the catalyst for that. The thing that really accelerates that will be our suffering. Sometimes my job is not even to greatly eliminate someone's suffering, because if they're not willing to tell themselves the truth, I can't make them. And when I say that you're not willing to, when a client is not willing to tell themselves the truth, I don't mean anything personal in that. There's nothing personal here. So I can't mean anything personal in that. I'm just saying that that's the movement presently, is that that you know, it's an egg and it's got cracks in it and there's a little beak sticking out, but it ain't coming any further. That happens sometimes. And until you're ripe, there's nothing you can do. But you can get ripe at surprising times. I've sat at the table, I can remember 3 years ago, something like that, sitting at a table with a woman that I just thought had absolutely no chance whatsoever of waking up, maybe ever. I just thought she was out there. And an hour into our lunch, she woke up and started talking to me like the Buddha. Just clear as a bell. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Never seen anything like it in my life. I have seen like that since, but I'd never seen any. That was the first time I ever saw that radical a shift from somebody who just was not, that didn't appear to be very close. And that'll show you just exactly how wise and observant I am and how much I know about awakening. Because I would have not given you a nickel for her chances. So whether our life situation looks like we're ready to wake up, most often I wouldn't say that our life situation will look like we are not ready to wake up. Most often I would say our life situation is going to be a mess because we're suffering. And we have, and our mate, our significant other has just died, God forbid. Or I've just lost all my money. Or my health is poor. I've just found out I'm going to die. I certainly get my share of terminal patients. I get my share of those who were terminally ill. And as I like to tell them, then everybody else I work with is terminally well. None of us get out of here alive. So suffering, sometimes what my job is simply to help you live your suffering. Go through your suffering skillfully, which is because some things just can't be avoided. That's the way of life. I have a client who has, there's been a post on this partially by with letters, this particular client I'm thinking of, but I have a client who has breast cancer, and where she doesn't now, thank goodness, but she did. But she told herself the truth going in, because the best thing I could tell her was that you can use this thing, because she's fixing to go into, you know, chemo and surgery and all, you know, the radiation. And I mean, you know, geez, it's the boogeyman, isn't it? And I couldn't tell her this is, you know, why don't you just keep your chin up, kid? What I did was I tell her you're fixing to suffer. And but you can use it to go to a deeper level of surrender. If you go into it with your eyes open, you go into it aware, instead of trying to shirk it, find out who it is that's suffering and why. And she was awake when she went into this, but she's very much more awake now, much clearer. I can tell from her. I haven't talked to her yet, but I'm going to, I think, next week. And you can tell from her emails. We contacted each other several times during her illness, and you could see that here was somebody that was getting it. You know, so here's somebody that had accepted the ticket to the dance and was willing to clear, was willing to go through the dance, even though there was some, even though there was some tacks on the floor, you know, and it hurt. But still, she was willing to dance because she was going to dance anyway. That unit was going to dance anyway. So when we talk about surrender, it wasn't like the surrendering the body to this. It was surrendering the psychology to what the what's happening to the body already. It's surrendering the spirit, the will of that I think that things should be other than this, because fundamentally that's the beginning and end of all resistance, is that I think things should be other than this. And when I'm suffering, I think things should be other than this. And I'm not going to tell you that would never occur to Fredness, the spiritual teacher, either. It can. I can still be pulled back into this thing. I'm not going to be pulled back in for long. I'm not going to be pulled in back in very far. Or I could be, I think, but I just noticed that I have not, and I have undergone some quite dramatic shifts in my life since I've become whatever you want to call it, stable, clear. But we don't have to stay there. We can recognize that our suffering has a common cause. All suffering has a common cause. It really comes down to the fact that I'm identifying with this. I think I'm this. And we don't want to say I'm not this. We're not trying to diss the unit. But it comes down to suffering comes down to the fact when I think I'm limited to being this. And I think that I'm this and only this. And that's far, far, far from the truth. I'm this, but I am this. In the case of Indra's net, I'm the jewel and the net. I'm not either or, I'm both. If you're suffering, well, let me back up here just a second and say that you have one job. And it will have taken you many, many lifetimes before you can complete your job. But you have one job here. And when I say many, many lifetimes, I don't mean like Fred is reincarnated or anything. I just mean there's specific patterns that don't leave when awakeness withdraws its attention from this body. This body dies, but it doesn't mean that absolutely everything goes away forever. It just doesn't. There's nowhere for it to go. So there are patterns that move. Call it DNA if you wish, just to give you an example. So, as long as I think I am just this, I'm misidentified, I'm going to have problems. So what I have to actually begin to do is to begin to accept a very strange movement. And that's the movement toward accepting life without a body. Am I willing to accept life as it is without taking it in through a body? Now, initially, in an initial awakening, we may or may not be aware of the body. There was a time I certainly was not aware of it during my very first glimpse, and I was not aware of the body for part of, you know, I had this, and I'm sorry, but I had the fairy tale awakening. You don't need it. I wouldn't even advise it. Don't encourage it. But I did. And so there was time there that I can't recall, and that I wasn't, you know, in touch, so to speak. But as soon as I came in touch with this again, you can bet that suffering started. Because now I was missing that. Now there'd been bliss, right? This is the candy. I'm a drug addict. Give me another hit. So I needed more suffering after my awakening. And almost all of us do. I mean, I've only heard tell of people who wake up and, you know, I'm fully clear and clean and all that. I've heard of that happening, but I've never seen it happen. I mean, Ramana Maharshi didn't do that. He woke up and went. It took him years to be able to make any sense out of what was happening. it took me years. I didn't go live in a cave or a graveyard, but it still took me years before I began to be able to make some sense out of this, much less enough sense out of this that I could teach. This is something to watch for, too, is that because we have this, we've had all this suffering now that we're associating with the fact that I should have woken up earlier, and why didn't I? And so as a result of all of this, and I want to prove I'm right and that I've got it and all of this, then we've got to be careful or the ego will take us out and make us a teacher a little too early. And maybe several years too early. Maybe not, but it certainly can happen. Some people can do it, I guess, successfully. I couldn't have. I'm doing all I can right now. Your one job here is to wake up, and this arising is your guru. This is your teacher. It's not me. It's this. It's not books. It's not CDs. It's this. All of those things are to help us. All of those things are good, and they're to help us see this properly. But this is the teacher, and it's got one message, and the message is surrender. That's its message. Is that and what am I ultimately surrendering? I'm surrendering Fred, and I'm willing to surrender Fred Ness. I notice I haven't completely yet, but I'm willing to. I have to be willing to accept life without a body, because if you look at it, if without your body, how much suffering would there be? How much suffering would you have right now without a body? Not much, I don't think. You check. If you can come up with any, I think that you're imagining it. All of our troubles are caught up in this. We got to feed it. We got to get it love and attention. We got to, you know, keep it warm. We got to comb its hair and get it, you know, get it a job. We got to buy it a car and get it, you know, and get it the right clothes and everything so that it feels right egoically. I mean, we're doing all this for this psychology. We're not doing it for the unit. I mean, we're feeding it the unit and we're clothing the unit. That's great. Shelter for the unit, that's fine. We can get a mate, good for you. But that mate's for psychology. It's not really for the unit. Now, it is for our race to continue, for our humanity to continue. So I'm not saying it's not important. When you resist your suffering, you suffer from that. Have you figured that out? First we suffer, then we resist our suffering, and we suffer from our resistance to our suffering. And this we can nip in the bud anytime we want to. This we can say, no, I am suffering, and this is the way it is, period. At least start there. Because once I recognize I am suffering, then I can recognize I am in the park. Once I recognize I am suffering, I can look at the cause of that suffering. And the cause of that suffering is going to be this. My identification with this. This thinks that things should be another way. It doesn't think it should be another way. It thinks everything else should be another way. It's pretty sure that everybody else is screwing up and doing everything wrong, and it knows what's right. It's the benchmark for the universe. That's the way it sees itself. And that's the way the other 7 billion see themselves too. And each one of us thinks, yes, but I'm the exception. I'm the important one. And that's not, obviously not the case. No one of us is right. So suffer, and then notice that the cause of your suffering is your identification, and then use that suffering to become willing to tell yourself the truth, which is that you're not limited to this, you are this. You are all of this. You had a client tell me the other day that they felt like they were just like a pinhead of light in the universe, and you know, and the fact is that what they are is the huge universe, and what they think they are is the pinhead of light. Do you see that? It always works 180 degrees away from the way we think. Always. So I think I'll wrap this one up. We're at about the half hour mark, and that's usually about as long as I can keep people's attention. So I've enjoyed talking to you. See you a little later. Thanks. Bye-bye.